Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Live from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
My gosh, what a gorgeous day. Typically, I'd be at church right now, but I'm staying here to talk sports with you. Not just you, but I'm here with Shamari Block. Shamari, happy Sunday, my friend. Are you ready to roll?
Oh, I'm always ready to go, man. The block is always hot.
Oh, I like it. The block. Come on, come to the block. It's a block party. That's what we got this morning, a block party. Shamari Block, Jim Cozumel, and you, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. That is our text line. That is our phone line. As we begin the show today, it is so glorious. What a great weekend, Shamari. I hope you've had a chance to take advantage of what a great weekend we've had so far.
Not as much as I would have liked to, but, you know, I enjoyed some nice time on my roof, enjoying the sun and the warm weather.
What are you doing on the roof, my friend?
I don't know, I'll go up to the roof. I have hobbies. I paint on the roof of my building sometimes, sit up, do things like that.
Nice. That's good. You got hobbies?
See, I mean, yeah, no, I'm not good at painting, but I do it, you know?
I think that's pretty awesome. Here's the deal. I was just talking about this yesterday with Whitey Gleason. I'm looking for a hobby. I'm trying to find a hobby. I've always wanted to learn how to paint. I've always wanted to write that great movie that I have an idea for five different movies. I want to write one of those movies. I just haven't been able to get myself going into a hobby, and that's great. What do you paint? Landscapes? What do you paint?
Oh, a little bit of everything, kind of whatever I feel. I can't, you know, if I'm talking about my artistic style, it's a little bit of everything. You know, it's kind of, let's try this, because it's trial and error. That's probably the best way to describe it.
Man, look at you. You're a man of many talents. That's how we get things rolling today. Hey, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. I know the NFL games went on yesterday, a couple of good ones. I don't know if anyone's going to be able to stop the Green Bay Packers. That Aaron Rodgers is something else, Shamari. That guy can play. When he flicks it downfield, man, it is just something else to watch.
I mean, it's been great to watch him in Green Bay instead of with the Niners for the past decade and a half. That's been horrible. Every time I watch Aaron Rodgers, though, I'm just like, that could have been our guy. And let me just say this first. There is no bigger Alex Smith fan than this guy right here, I assure you. But again, we could have had Rodgers. It's like, I don't know, like on those old-time sitcoms back in the day, like from the 50s or something, like someone always say something like, I could have married so-and-so, you know, to their husband. Or you know what I'm talking about? That kind of thing you hear.
My wife says that to me. I don't have to go to a sitcom. She just tells me that.
Well, you know, I remember hearing that on some line. I could have married John Johnson or whatever. And, you know, that's how we feel sometimes. When you go over Alex Smith, who, again, I appreciate, to Kaepernick, to Jimmy G, to Sean Hill, all those guys could have been Aaron Rodgers. But no, Aaron Rodgers is amazing. It's amazing to watch him throw that football.
Amazing.
And that Rams defense, number one in the league, toast over and over again repeatedly. And I can't help but feel watching that game that they saw something in the Rams defense that told them they can go deep early and often, because they did. All those big plays over the top, including the dropped ones. Oh, man, that was, yeah.
You know, what Aaron Rodgers does out there, it's that old line that some people are playing chess while others are playing checkers. He's the guy playing chess. He just can do so many things. Play action stuff. When he's in play action, just forget about it. It seems like he owns whatever defense is going up against him. We'll talk a bunch about the NFL games and the games going on today, which I think are going to be fantastic. Are you of the mindset that you're looking forward to seeing the two old men, Tom Brady and Drew Brees, go at it one more time? Or is that storyline kind of, are you over that?
I'm not over it, but that's not the game that I want to see. It's because I don't think it's going to be as exciting as watching Patrick Mahomes throw the football in a blowout, okay? Even in a blowout, Patrick Mahomes whipping the football around, kind of like Aaron Rodgers. It's just impressive to watch. You talk about Brady isn't Brady, but Breeze is less Breeze than Brady is less Brady right now, and I just don't know that that's going to be an entertaining game to watch.
Do you believe in the old trope that it's hard to beat the same team three times in one NFL season? Already the Saints have beaten up the Buccaneers a couple of times, including a blowout the last time they played.
I mean, the numbers say, so yeah, I believe it, because I believe in numbers, and I believe it's something like 12-5 or something in those games. 17 times it's happened, and the team that won the first two games won 12 times. Yeah, no, That's a thing.
Yep, it absolutely is a thing. We'll talk more about the NFL a little bit later on. We have to talk about the NBA and what's happening there. Did you see what the Beard did in his opener with the Brooklyn Nets, my friend?
Yeah, but you expect that, right?
I didn't expect 30 in a triple-double. I did not expect that.
He's averaged pretty much 30 and 10 assists for most of his career since he became the Beard. And then you put him out there with Kevin Durant. He has less eyes on him. He has all this stuff going on. Because I could see him scoring 30 points every night, especially with Kyrie out. When Kyrie comes back, you have to share the ball. Who knows? But, I mean, I've never been impressed by James Harden. I have a great appreciation for the amount of points he scores and all those things. He's boring to watch because of all the free throws and all the theatrics to get to the free throw line. I've never been a fan of that. It's not exciting basketball. And additionally, just what has he won?
How far does he get? Exactly. Once he gets to the playoffs, it seems that he hits certain spaces or certain walls. The Warriors were his wall at one point. When the Rockets were up 3-2, he couldn't close out. He had his chances, couldn't close out. We'll see if he can close out now that he's got a new cast of characters around him and just how far the Brooklyn Nets will go. But when we talk about the NBA, Shamari Block, Jim Cozumore with you here on a glorious Sunday morning in the Northern California Bay Area, I got to start talking about the Golden State Warriors, a team that had Friday night off because of COVID. They're off Saturday and Sunday. They don't play until tomorrow against the Los Angeles Lakers. They're 6-up, 6-down. And Shamari, if you look at the Warriors through 12 games, and that's a sixth of the season. It's a 72-game season this year. Sixth of the season. Do we know who the Warriors are? Do we know what their identity is just yet?
From where you can expect them to be standpoint of what do you think their record is going to be, I think we see it, 6-6. I think they're about a 500-ish.
So if I gave you 36-36 right now, would you take it? Would you sign on the dotted line? Warriors, end of the year, 36 up, 36 down. We'll take our chances if we get to the 7-10 seeds.
No.
Ooh.
I mean,
strong from the studio. Thank you.
Right? I kind of feel like you have to. I don't think you can expect much more than that from them. Maybe 38-34, maybe 40 wins. I want winners too. Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Mike Singletary. Absolutely no, but hey, I mean, if you're 4 games above 500, you are technically a quote-unquote winner. If you're in the playoffs, you're a winner. And this team is a winner because what they've done in the past and what they can do in the future. Without Klay Thompson, with this team trying to mesh, with all the things that they're going through and dealing with, I feel a 500 season is, I feel that's legit. I would say good coaching job by Steve Kerr. Good way to go, Steph Curry, Draymond Green for carrying this team. And I would feel optimistic about next year if they're about 500.
I will tell you this, Shamari. If they land at 500, to me, because of how much money they've spent, and I know you might be able to come back and say, whoa, he spent the money thinking he was going to have Clay here. They still spent the money. They went out and got Kelly Oubre. They thought that was going to be the piece that, for the short term, got into the space of Klay Thompson's absence, I think 500 might be a little underperforming. I think this is a team that has been built to be better than 500, and they had better be better than 500. If not, maybe we say, hey, Steve, where's all the magical play calls that you had when the team was loaded and you were getting to the finals?
So, yes, they spend a lot of money. Yes, they're over the luxury tax. Yes, Kelly Oubre cost $70 million. You throw in the luxury tax. Is that anybody have that number for me?
Oh my God, I don't even want to think about. You know what? You say that, and I think if I'm Joe Lacob, and I know I'm a billionaire, I know I'm successful in other businesses. Man, that stings if you tell me my price tag for Kelly Oubre is $70 million.
Yikes!
Thank you, Dan.
Wow, but you know, Kelly Oubre was never supposed to elevate them to Klay Thompson levels. And yeah, they spent just to stay relevant. And you know what? The Yankees and the Dodgers in particular come to mind. The Yankees, yeah, they bought championships, but they also bought, wild card game teams and things like that. And you want to stay relevant, especially right now with everybody at home watching. You got to stay relevant. And it's going to pay off down the road, because let's just say they don't bring Oubre in. They don't make the D'Angelo Russell trade that led to Wiggins and all those kind of things, and then they're rebuilding right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Dubs fans, Dub Nation, we're always going to love the Warriors, but for the last half decade plus, the Warriors have had national attention, and that's what they have to keep up. So the Warriors jerseys are in New Jersey and in Dallas and all those other places, because the thing about the Warriors over the past half decade is when you'd be watching the Warriors, when you'd watch a Warriors game and they're playing the Houston Rockets, or they're playing the Clippers, you see Dubs fans everywhere now.
Yep.
And that's what they need to hold on to. And that's why that $70 million is worth it to a Joe Lacob guy, because down the road, you're still relevant and you still get that revenue.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, is that this is a global team. This isn't just the Bay Area's team. As much as we in the Bay Area glom onto them, they've been successful, there are guys. This is a global brand, I think. It's not just even a national brand, Shamari. I mean, you go to China and you're seeing a bunch of number 30 Currys out there. You're seeing a bunch of Klay Thompsons. Yeah, those two guys are out there. And I think that's what Joe Lacob and Peter Guber saw when they bought the team. Maybe they could make this more of a global club. Success actually breeds that, and then the player's likability adds to that. So you're absolutely right, and we'll see if they can continue to be a national team. Once we start to get fans in arenas, will we start to see some of those fans wearing the 30, the Klay jersey, whatever it happens to be? But you're right. When you start to fall off, there are new things. Are we going to start to see the Harden Nets jersey? Which, by the way, I don't know if you saw the highlights. I'm not a fan of the tie-dye jerseys that the Nets are wearing. They're the throwbacks that they're wearing this year.
They stink!
Thank you, Steiny.
The NBA jerseys in general, the Warriors, by the way, I feel do the absolute best job with their jersey designs. But everybody else, I mean, you don't need to. Okay, let's put it this way, okay? Let's talk about the iconic jerseys in sports, okay?
Okay.
The Yankees pinstripes.
Right.
The Raiders silver and black.
Yeah.
What else we got here?
You know, for a lot of people, they would say, and this is Canadian hockey fans, say the Montreal Canadiens, the interlocking CH that they have is a pretty iconic jersey in their particular sport. And in fact, the original six, the Blackhawks, the Bruins, the Red Wings, the Rangers, the Maple Leafs, and the Canadiens, a lot of people feel that those are kind of iconic uniforms that started the league, and they had a classic look to them.
Yeah, but when you talk about the jerseys that people buy, like I'm talking about the jerseys that you see a person wearing a jersey and they're like, oh man, cool jersey, you like the Raiders, they're like, no, I just like this jersey, they're usually more simple. I mean, yeah, there are some of those Fruit Loop jerseys that everybody wears, like, you know, all the colors, it looks like a bowl of Fruit Loops,
right,
generally speaking, you don't have to do too much because the team is the thing that people are there for. That's why they're wearing the jersey. And give people some options, give them some different colors, so it's like I have the all black thing, so I can wear all black sneakers, whatever, people like to do that. But you know, you don't have to get crazy. And the
actually,
Warriors, I love it, man.
That phrase you use, all black, you know, that's a classic jersey in rugby and global rugby. The All Blacks, the New Zealand team is known as the All Blacks, and their uniform is an iconic uniform, actually.
Simplicity.
Exactly.
Do less is more, Jersey people. Less is more.
So what are you wearing right now? We should let people know. We have our own internal video that we have while we do the show here at 95.7 The Game. Our producer, Sam, I'm a lover, not a fighter, Lubman, puts all of this stuff together. He's technologically sound. The guy's very, very sound. What are you wearing today? You're sporting one today. What do you got?
Yeah, I got on the throwback-ish 80s-style number 81 T.O. 49ers jersey.
I love it! Throwback T.O. Throwback-ish?
Oh, no, wait. Hey, peep it. Throwback-ish, because T.O. never wore this jersey. He played in the 90s when they wore the ones with the where the numbers had the black kind of like outline thing around
them. I kind of like those jerseys.
I love the classics. I liked those jerseys at the time. When you talk about my favorites, the ones that Montana and Young wore in their early days.
Sure.
Never get better than that. And this one right here, I was showing you. The three stripes here, I don't know. I just love it. You got to love the three stripes under the numbers.
Yeah, see, and that's a classic less is more jersey. You got the 49er red, and you got white. That's it. You don't have anything else involved in that. And it's kind of interesting to see, and you're right, a lot of these new teams who come out, whether it's an expansion team or whatever it happens to be, you know, I'm a hockey fan. I was watching the Sharks and the Coyotes yesterday. The Coyotes were wearing their throwback jerseys from their original team, and they have so many colors on that thing and so many design angles on it that I don't even know what the logo was, for crying out loud, because there's so much going on. But you wear a nice, simple uniform and let it rip, and teams and people tend to go to it. And you know who I think has a really neat look uniform, which I don't know if you can call it iconic, but I really think it's fantastic. I think the San Francisco Giants with their off-white home uniforms, I love those things. Oh, yeah. I love the off-white. I think those are really nice.
When we talk about doing too much, though, I must say that my favorite Giants uniforms are the ones from the late 70s, early 80s, the orange ones, where when they went from the button-ups to, like, the V-neck sort of situation.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I am a huge fan of where they had the script Giants across the chest. That is definitely my favorite Giants jersey, but definitely the off-white. Love that.
Yeah, once they went to 3rd and King and they switched over to that off-white, that was a really unique look. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really cool look. And the old Giants stuff, and sometimes you still see some fans wearing that orange. I know the pullover, right? The pullover V-neck that they had.
Yeah, the Willie McCovey, yeah.
Yeah.
And the Vita Blue.
Right, and you're right, it was script, and the G was kind of a circle line down, and then it said Giants across it. Yeah, I know exactly the one you're talking about. Oh, that was a good one. I like that hue of orange that they use. I love the hue of orange that they use. Anyway, we're getting off on the jerseys, and I love doing the sidebar stuff. Any jerseys you think are iconic, you can hit us at 888-957-9570. Getting back to the Golden State Warriors, give me a positive about them, because I think it's easy to jump to the negative and say, oh, Oubre's been disappointing. Wiggins hasn't shown up yet. Give me something positive. Give me something that you like about what you've seen with the Golden State Warriors.
I mean, I really feel, if you're a Warriors fan, here's what you look forward to. And I know that, you know, we're 12 games in, six of the season, blah, blah, blah. I don't think they're playing anywhere near their best basketball. And if you're 500 and you haven't hit your ceiling yet, who knows what your ceiling is? Things are going to get better. It kind of has to, because when you look at everything you see on the court, you look at the shooting percentages, you look at the defensive ratings, you look at all these things, and they can do better than that. But then when the eye test also, you look and you see missed passes, you see people dribbling through open lanes and all those kind of things. Those are things that can get cleared up. And once they do, they are going to be better. I don't know if they beat the Lakers better, but they're definitely going to be a lot better. And right now, they're not that bad.
Suggestion on the text line, a very iconic jersey, the purple Toronto Raptors jersey. That is going old school. Do you remember the one with the dinosaur on the front of the jersey? The Damon Stoudemire version of what they were wearing back at that time. That's a good throwback. That's not a bad throwback.
You know another one, though, and you see these everywhere. Not everywhere, but you see them everywhere. You see them more places than you would think. People really love the Celtics old school jersey, and that's literally just green and white. But people love it because, one, and how often do people wear green, you know?
Right.
If someone's wearing green, they're probably wearing a Celtics jersey. But for one, Celtics were winners, and you got the bird thing going on there, and boom. I don't know what the jersey sales for the Celtics classic jerseys are, but I guarantee you they're pretty high relative to, you know, the Miami Heat multicolored thing that they had going on a couple weeks ago.
Yep. I hear what you're saying there. You know, you were talking about teams with the Fruit Loop colors from the 510. Mm-hmm. Oregon on line one, because they definitely have the Fruit Loop colors. Oregon, I have to change the hue on my television when the Oregon Ducks play. That's how crazy their yellows and greens are. They are vivid. They are a vivid colored team. There's no question about that.
Oregon kind of started it, though, and mm-hmm. really Nike started it, Phil Knight. And when Oregon did it, it was cool because they were the only person doing it. But now everyone else is like, oh, hey, let's jump in the mix. And it's too much, right? Because if you have one team, for instance, okay, let's talk Boise State.
Sure.
If half of college football decided to play on Smurf turf, then we would all be sick of Smurf turf.
Yeah, but you're right.
Every once in a while you pop on Boise State, you're like, oh, it's a Boise State game, obviously, Smurf turf.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Smurf
turf,
good point.
Half the games, ugh.
Yeah, that's a point. You can get too much of a good thing, right? You want to have cake every once in a while. You don't want to have cake every day. Same thing with the Smurf turf from the 510. When it comes to the Warriors, hell no. Nah. This team constructed with Steph right now, a 500 team at the end of the year, we got issues. That's from Kane in Oakland.
Mm.
So Kane thinks that with Steph, and that's probably the positive to me, is that he has come back and he has shown that he still is a superstar. He is not fading. You know, every star has to succumb to father time at some point. The question is, can he do it every night for 72 games? That's going to be harder to do. Defenses are going to be able to focus in on him a little bit more. But if I'm looking at positives for the Golden State Warriors, Shamari, there is no question in my mind that one of the biggest positives is number 30 is still worth the price of admission.
Definitely, but that was never in question for me. I don't know. Was that in question for you?
Yeah, it was in a couple of ways. One, mm-hmm. he's got a lot of extra miles on the tires from having to go to finals 5 straight years and playoff runs in 7 straight years. You know, that 5-year run where they got to the finals, their bodies took on an extra 82 games of basketball. It's a full extra mm-hmm. season on your body. They played 6 seasons in the span of 5 seasons. Then you had the year last year where he got hurt. And you're wondering, well, they bring in new bodies. He was hurt. He had a lot of miles on himself. How's he going to come back from the injury? I was wondering how he would be able to come back with a new cast of characters, knowing that they weren't the super great team anymore and that other teams are going to be able to focus on him a little bit more. But I'll tell you, he has more than responded. He still is Super Steph, is what he is. It shouldn't even be called a superstar. It should just be called Super Steph.
But, I mean, even in the early part of the season when he was struggling and mm-hmm. his shot wasn't falling all the time and you're looking and you're like, whatever, I still saw the handle. I still saw the court vision. Steph Curry is going to be Steph Curry for a relatively long time. I mean, maybe not when he's 40, but he's not going anywhere at 33, 34, 35 even. And you think about Iguodala playing at, what, he's 36 and he's contributing. Last year he contributed to a really good team. And you talk about what he was to the Warriors in his 30s, and Iguodala was never on Steph's level, but Iguodala is still basically essentially the same Iguodala for the most part. And then you look at LeBron James, and well, he's still LeBron James. So this isn't the 80s or the 90s. Tom Brady is 44, about to play in a divisional a playoff game in a few hours. Okay, nutrition's different. These, not just Steph Curry, not just LeBron James. I definitely feel that in the future, we're going to see a lot more 40-year-olds and 38-year-olds playing at a high level across the board in all sports.
That, to me, would be pretty amazing if that's something they would be able to do. Is if players can play into their mid and upper 30s the way they're playing now, that would be very difficult to do. LeBron, I think he might be in a separate category.
LeBron James.
That's right. He might be in a separate category, but you know, players are coming in. They're young. They're fast. It's just hard to keep up with them. But maybe you're right. Maybe players take care of their bodies in a different way, in a way that they didn't used to 20 years ago, so that now they can get a little bit more mileage out of themselves. And the league has worked with the Players Association not to have 4 games in 5 nights anymore, so the body doesn't take the same wear and tear. Maybe they can stay this way a little bit longer. I'm amazed. Listen. When he dropped 62, I mean, come on, that's amazing. But what impressed me, Shamar, was the next night he dropped 30. So mm-hmm. he goes from 62, and you're thinking, all right, he's going to have a natural, he's going to come back. No, he dropped 30 the next night. That was, to me, pretty insane.
That's crazy.
But that's Steph Curry. And like I said, I don't think Steph Curry's going anywhere. One thing about The Last Dance, you watch The Last Dance, obviously.
Sure.
And most of that was just, there wasn't that much new information. But the one thing about The Last Dance that stuck with me is, because I really didn't necessarily realize this, is Michael Jordan came into the league, and at the point, the NBA was made up of a lot of great players. But Michael Jordan, at least according to The Last Dance, was one of the first people to, you know, have year-round fitness and focus on it instead of just, like, you know, partying all the time and doing all that kind of stuff. And people are taking it more and more seriously, and science is developing. So, again, I'm not saying everyone's going to play into their mid-30s, but I will definitely see a big increase in playing into your mid to late 30s and playing at a high level across the board as time goes on.
Yeah, one of the guys who also carried it down to the next level was the next guy who was supposed to take the mantle from Michael Jordan, and that's Kobe Bryant. I mean, how many times did we see videos of Kobe? He had that one Pilates instrument in his house where he's working out and doing special workouts on off days or after practices. You know, that's the one thing people don't realize. The workouts these guys partake in outside of practice to make sure they get the most out of practice is insane. I remember, you know, I was in the NBA for 25 years. It doesn't matter. But you would see guys, their warm-up, Shamari, is harder than our workout. You know, and I work out pretty hard. You know, you got to work out a sweat. I'm getting a little bit older here. I got to really work out to try to not throw on the extra LBs. Their warm-up, I'm watching guys on a treadmill, you know, just getting ready for the game, and I couldn't even get close to the numbers that they're putting up before they go out and they run for 48 minutes at the highest caliber level. It's amazing the way they treat their bodies. It's just, it really is a different thing to see.
Oh, yeah. It's a business, too. So you're investing. It's an investment.
Yeah. All right, tell you what we got to do. Let's step aside. When we continue, we'll hear from Steve Kerr on Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins is going to be the lock we have to pick for 72 games. We're going to figure out if he's good in some areas, better at other areas. What does Steve Kerr see from him on the defensive side? That's all coming up with Shamari Block and Jim Cozumel. You can join us on the text line, 888-957-9570. That's our phone number as well, 888-957-9570. Listen, it's a Sunday morning, and it's gorgeous. We know you're out there for your morning walk, taking the dog, going to get some donuts and coffee, because that's an essential business. It's wide open. Maybe you're on your way to Mass, to church. Thanks for taking us along for the ride. Shamari and Coz on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Soak this in, everybody. If you've never heard Luther Vandross, look him up on Spotify. And thank me and Shamari. This is music. Shamari, when I was in college, I used to listen to Luther all the time.
Man, Luther in the 90s, are you serious? In the 80s, Luther was huge, both in body and in ability to sing and just wow you. Oh, R.I.P., man. R.I.P. Luther.
Yeah, that's way too soon, man. He passed way too soon. I was once in Beverly Hills. I was traveling with the Sacramento Kings at the time, and it was a Sunday morning, and I was walking down Rodeo Drive, and they're shooting a video, and it was a Luther Vandross video. And it was Luther in a convertible, and he's driving down the middle of Rodeo Drive. It was awesome. But Luther Vandross I think he is a game-changing talent. His voice talent was so good. Didn't he start as a backup singer for Dionne Warwick?
That would not surprise me. I cannot confirm or deny this, but that wouldn't surprise me. Dionne Warwick, there are a few people that blew up that were with Dionne Warwick. Like that singing backup band must have been epic, because I forget who else, but there was someone else. Yeah, and then Whitney Houston, Dionne Warwick's cousin, blah blah blah. Yep. So there was a lot of talented people around Dionne Warwick, and that's what friends are for—to blow you up in the music industry.
Oh man, I'll tell you something. Those are some great, great voices right there. But I was always a huge Luther fan. I'm telling you, if you've never heard Luther, drop some Luther on there this afternoon. You will thank us, because that is some great, great stuff right there. Shamari Block, Jim Cozumel. Yeah, that one we just had.
Especially that cut that was just on. Yeah, All My Love. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That you couldn't – I'll tell you, there's not a bad – that's one of those get the best of. You can get any album, and it's the best of. It doesn't matter. That's how good he is. And I know it sounds like we're overstating it. Sorry, man. That's the real deal. That guy's the real deal, and there's no question about it. All right, let's get this thing going. Oh, wait. According to the 650, Teddy Pendergrass, greater than Luther Vandross, no debate. I will tell you this. I will take Luther. That's a good one, but I'm going Luther on this. And from the a different 650, he was also Luther, a backup singer for David Bowie. I did not know that, and I'm a huge David Bowie guy. Wow. Good talent right there. Okay. A lot of talent.
I'm trying to listen to this. I'm trying to hear this in my head. I'm trying to hear Luther backing up Bowie on, anything. Star Space Odyssey, okay? I'm trying to picture him, right? I'm like, I don't know where Luther's voice fits in, but it did, right? Somewhere at some point.
Hey, and that guy could sing anything and it would fit in. It doesn't matter. Fit him in anywhere. That's how great he is. All right, let's move this thing along here on a Sunday morning with Shamari Block and Jim Cosimo. Give me a little Steve Kerr. We're talking about the Warriors. Andrew Wiggins is going to be the one guy that gets a lot of focus this year. And unfortunately, it is not always going to be a positive look at him because I think there are many NBA followers, Shamari, who are disappointed in what Wiggins has brought to the NBA when he was the number one overall selection out of Kansas. They thought he had a chance. They call him the Maple Jordan. Because the Canadian is the great Canadian is going to be the Michael Jordan of Canada. Here's what Steve Kerr has to say about Wiggins at the defensive end.
I'm not sure he didn't play good defense in Minnesota. It's just nobody noticed. The fact that he's here now, his team gets a lot more notoriety. We're on TV more often. So now people are recognizing some of the statistical accomplishments that Andrew has put forth here in the early going of the season in terms of shot challenges and blocked shots. I think he was number one in the league and out of every player in shot challenges going into the Denver game, and maybe fifth in the league in blocks, I believe. So, you know, we made it a priority in the offseason. We talked to him about potentially, you know, being an all defensive team player. Knowing the way our team is structured, you know, we need him to do what Andre did for us for years, what Clay has done over the years. You know, take on the other team's best players and use your strength and athleticism and length to try to make an impact. And I think he's responded really well to that request.
So Shamari, when we look at Wiggins, should we stop looking at the sexy numbers of points and rebounds, and should we start to think, well, we actually have to watch him play in order to see how he affects a game?
Yeah, no, and that's the thing, is that when you talk about Wiggins, you talk about him previously, forget that. Forget everything that happened in Andrew Wiggins' career before he came to the Golden State Warriors. This is a whole new world that he's in. It's a whole new environment. It's a whole new... Like, he went from JV to varsity in terms of how the team that he was on prepares, how their style of play, everything. So watch him play. Because defense is athleticism. It is. Defense is basketball IQ. But defense, which is why it's always so frustrating when you have a person that has the athleticism that's not a good defender, defense is effort. Defense is effort and desire. And when you watch him on the court, even when he's guarding Durant and Durant drops a billion on him, you see the effort, you see the desire. And as long as he has that, and he has the intensity, and he has Draymond Green, and he has James Wiseman backing him up, he's going to be way better defensively in everyone's eyes. And this team is going to get a lot better defensively by the end of this year. And I'll be honest with you, when you talk about Kelly Oubre and his struggles, and you talk about everyone zeroing in on Steph Curry and all these things, I don't think the offense is going to get much better. I think the defense can get a whole lot better, and that's what's going to take them to the next level. And as always, the defense for the Warriors, since they've been good, has always fueled the offense. So once that in the games that defense was going and they were getting turnovers, they win. In the games where Dame Lillard is dribbling through the entire defense like they're not there, they lose.
But I think it has to start with the beginning of the game, because you look at what this starting lineup is doing, Shamari, and per 100 possessions, they're getting outscored by almost 11 points a game. Starters, hey, listen, that's the bread and butter for this team. The Stephs of the world, the Oubres are out there, the Wiggins are out there. You got Wiseman, I know it's a young guy, Draymond is there. I think the starters have to hold up their end. Steph is holding up his end. There's no question about it. But everyone else has got to do that. You can't always rely on your second unit coming in and getting the job done.
I mean, that's what they're there for. They're there to hold it down. And it's not just the fact that the second unit can score. The second unit, I feel, defends the other team's second unit better. And then, like I said, you have Dame Lillard, you have Kevin Durant just dribbling through open lanes over and over again, and they have to tighten that up. And part of that was not having Draymond. Part of that is that Steph has defensive limitations because he's a smaller guy. And then part of that is just they need to gel better. They really, really do. And like I said, man, the Warriors don't have a we're going to set up in the half court and we're just going to beat you over and over again. They don't have that kind of offense. They need to get in the fast break. They need to not pull the ball out of the basket, which means, you know, that they need to grab rebounds to get going. They need to get turnovers to get going. And then, of course, they need to limit turnovers on the other side. But if the Warriors, and I don't know the numbers on this, but I'm willing to bet that any game that the Warriors take the same or more amount of shots than the other team this season, I'm willing to bet that record is probably pretty good and better than 600.
Yeah, we'll see how they end up doing, especially tomorrow against the Los Angeles Lakers. Listen, Warriors have seen a bunch of different looks. We've seen them have to go up against the zone, have to go up against the box and one. It's all because of Steph. There's no question about that. So Steve Kerr addressed that, how Steph is handling all this extra on-court attention that he's getting. Let's hear it.
Well, I think that's part of the balance that we're trying to find. You know, when teams are going to blitz him and double-team him, he obviously needs to get the ball out of his hands. But we need Steph to score, too, on this team. We may not have needed his points as much a few years ago, but we need his points now. So we're trying to find that balance between, him getting himself going, us helping him get going, but also not playing into the defense's intentions. And the other night, he did a great job getting himself going, but he also had 7 turnovers, and he knows that he tried to do too much at times. So that's the balance that we're trying to strike, and we'll get there. It's just it's early in the season, and we're finding our way.
So a lot to chew on there, but if there's one thing that I almost am finding myself, Shamari, interested in is what the opposition is going to try to do against Steph tonight. That's how different he is that they're specifically – when's the last time you saw boxing one outside of a college game, for crying out loud?
About 3 years ago in the playoffs when they – oh, who was that who used it to try to slow – and they slowed him down for a little bit, but eventually they Steph overcame. And what game was that? Oh, I think that was the Raptors. The Raptors did it a couple years ago. Someone
was that,
did that.
The Toronto Finals Series? Is that when they used it?
Yeah.
Wow. I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah, someone did that. Yeah, and Steph Curry is. He's different, but also this team is different, and it works. And it worked. And it might work moving forward. Not because it's hard to beat, but because Steph Curry means so much to the offensive game of the Warriors. And when you talk about, okay, oh, hey, let me pass out to Kelly Oubre. Let me pass out to Wiggins, who I like what Wiggins is doing. I really, really do. But he's not in Steph's stratosphere. Or Draymond Green, who, as much as I appreciate what Draymond Green does offensively as a facilitator, as a playmaker, and just a smart guy out there getting everybody where they're going. The fact that when he gets the ball, he's not a threat. The only threat, offensive threat on this team is Steph Curry. And if you think about it, Steph's the leading scorer. Oubre's the fifth. Wiseman is like the second or third. So you got Steph, then Wiggins, then Wiseman, then Pascal coming off the bench, and then Draymond and Oubre. And those are two of your starters. And they're being outscored by a rookie who doesn't know what he's doing and the sixth man. And I don't know that works. And that's why the box in full four is going to work, because no one else out there on the court with Steph Curry, except for Wiggins, can really do anything.
That's why we look at the Warriors and we look at the sexy numbers for Wiggins. Because we know he needs a wingman. Klay would normally be the wingman. They need to have another bona fide threat that the defense has to concern themselves with so that Steph can also get a little bit of extra freedom that allows him to score a little bit more. And you're right on Draymond. There are times when he's standing out there. I don't know if he has no confidence in shooting a three anymore. There were times when he just wasn't. It was almost as great a passer as he is threat-wise, don't you? I got the feeling they were going 4-on-5 sometimes, that he just wasn't even a threat to look to score.
No, literally 4-on-5. And really, if you put Oubre in the mix, because he's all in his head, and there have been times where I'll see him catch the ball at the three line, he's wide open, and he hesitates. And and in the NBA, like 3 feet, that's all the space in the world you need. And he'll have 10, and he still can't get the shot off. That said, because let's just look at this year, and you ask about positives, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Wiggins, Curry, Wiseman, Pascal, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Put Klay Thompson back into the mix next year. Coles, okay. Come on, that's legit, right? That is a contender, yeah.
Well, the question becomes: how do you come back from a knee first and then an Achilles next? Those are tough things to come back from. You're right. If it's normal Klay, if it's Klay coming off of one of those things, I'm thinking, all right, you got a chance to contend. Throw some guys in there off the bench. Maybe you can get a veteran to take a little less to come and be on your bench. Maybe you got a shot at competing. My biggest question is going to be, how does Klay come back? Not will he work hard enough to come back. That I know. But, man, those are tough things to have to overcome. And he uses so much of his energy, Shamari, on the defensive end. That's the part where I wonder if that's going to affect him the most. Is that where he's going to be hurt? The defensive end, he's not going to be able to take the toughest guard on the opposite side.
I mean, Klay's game was never about athleticism, right? He's an NBA-level athlete. He's not an elite NBA-level athlete. And I think that when you talk about his defensive prowess, I think that the underrated aspect of it is how smart of a defender he was. And I don't know whether that was film study or whatever, but when you talk about him guarding guys like Russell Westbrook, like James Harden, those guys are definitely faster than him, and he's trying to go backwards and side to side, and he stays in front of them, yes, because he has the athleticism of a legit NBA player, but also that there has to be a whole lot of defensive Draymond Green IQ in Klay Thompson, and that's not going anywhere. So the question is let's say he comes back at 80% of Klay Thompson. Is that enough athleticism to where his IQ and his ability to defend, will it be diminished that greatly?
Oof, that's a tough question right there. I mean he's a guy who does have to guard the Dame Lillards of the world. He has to guard the best offensive weapon on the opposition. There are times when he'll get a LeBron from time to time. Is that right? I mean, there are times that...
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going through the West. Is he going to have to get a Devin Booker when you play Phoenix? Is he going to have to get Luka Doncic when you play Dallas? Is he going to get a piece of Jamal Murray when you're playing the Denver Nuggets? That's a tough... Those are tough asks for a guy that's 80% of what he used to be. Still, it's going to be better than most. But that's going to be a tough, tough thing. One thing I do want to kind of break into... And that is teams, I'm looking at the West, and I'm looking at all the teams and their records, home versus road. The Lakers are 4-3 at home. The Clippers are 4-2. The Jazz are 2-2. Portland's 4-3. The Spurs are 2-4. The Nuggets, who I think are underperforming greatly this year, are just 3-4 at home. No one's really dominating. The Thunder are 1-5 at home, and their one win was an overtime comeback over the Chicago Bulls. Nobody's dominating at home this year. How much do you think it's affecting some of these teams to not have a crowd at home and kind of help you defend your home floor?
I mean, check this out. Dub Nation, you matter, okay? Mm-hmm. Dub Nation matters, and everybody else's fans matter. Because anyone who's ever played a pickup game of basketball, okay, you're running up and down the court 20 times. That takes a lot of energy, a lot, okay? And yes, these athletes are in wonderful shape, but they're out there running for just 6-7 minutes straight, back and forth, full speed, running, jumping. You need that energy to keep going, absolutely. And when you talk about Roracle, I mean, I know Chase Center is where they're at now. When you talk about Roracle, when Steph Curry would hit a three and the crowd would go off, I feel personally that Dub Nation, you guys contributed to that hot streak when Steph would get hot, because he'd hear the crowd, he'd feel it, energy would just, he'd absorb it, and then he'd go and drop like 3-4 more threes in a row. So yeah, it matters. It definitely matters.
Yeah, I think it does too. I think there's something to it. And I think when you see teams like the Lakers who are 7-0 on the road, and the Clippers who are 5-2 on the road, and the Jazz who are 6-2 on the road, it shows that teams, they're going into the opposition's home, and it's not the hostile home of that team anymore. They're just going to another gym. I've had an opportunity to be in arenas this year to see games played live. And they do a really great job to make it feel like something's going on. But it's not the same. You know, you can have as many cardboard cutouts as you want. You can have as much crowd noise piped in to the arena as you want. You can have fans booing on a call that goes against them as well when you have that. And I think arenas are doing a good job. But, Shamari, it's not the same, brother. It's just not the same.
And the funny thing is, the one in there that you would think would still maintain their home court advantage, the Denver Nuggets, because of the elevation, right?
Yeah, you're right. That's a good call. Advantage,
right? The fact that they, too, have lost that advantage, that kind of shows it. But small sample size, we have hundreds more NBA games to play. But I would not be surprised if that trend continues.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. But teams are going on the road, and they're over 500. The Jazz are over 500. Phoenix over 500. Portland over 500. The Spurs over 500. The Nuggets over 500. The Grizzlies are 4-1 on the road. Oklahoma City is 5-1 on the road. It's showing you teams. And Oklahoma City has hit reset, and they're still 500 and having a fun season to a sixth of the way through the year. You said there are a lot of games to go, but this is going to be a different year. Just like last year was different in the bubble, this is going to be different because there are no fans out there. I don't even know. Do you think the few fans that they had in Green Bay yesterday and the few fans they had in Buffalo, that had somewhat of an effect on the game? I do think it was interesting that there were fans there, but I've gotten to the point where I'm used to watching games without fans, Shamari.
Yeah, well, I don't really think so. I just think, specifically, particularly in Green Bay, I just feel like Aaron Rodgers, as we say, was on one, okay? Aaron Rodgers is on one. He was throwing that ball everywhere. There were no answers. And when you talk about the Buffalo game, I mean, honestly, if you want to say the fans had any effect in Buffalo, it would have been Lamar Jackson. Because Lamar Jackson is an amazing football player. He's an amazing quarterback. But I feel that you kind of have to pin that loss squarely almost on his shoulders because the defense held up. Josh Allen has been a world beater a lot this year. And the defense held Josh Allen down for most of the game. They got to him. They sacked him a couple times. Lamar Jackson, in particular, that pick six, they were still in it. They still had a shot.
Absolutely,
they were down.
They were in it. They were right there.
They were still in it. That pick six ended it. And I don't know that the crowd had anything to do with that. That was just Lamar Jackson still developing. He's a young man. He was drafted at 21 years old. I think he's only like 24 right now. So he has a bright future. But yesterday, man, that was him. That was indeed.
All right.
He needs to pat his chest and look at his teammates and be like, I got y'all next year.
Let's circle back a couple more things on the Warriors. Then at the top of the hour, I think we have got Mark Medina coming on with us to talk a little bit more. NBA,
ooh,
kind of NBA, a global look and a Golden State Warrior look. We'll get to Mark in just a couple of minutes from now. But off the text line at 888-957-9570, we'll get back on the Luther Vandross trail from the 650. Luther, his first break was in 74. He was on the Young Americans album for David Bowie then. That's when he got his break. So that's the David Bowie stuff. So that's good musical knowledge, 650. Thank you very much for that. And then from the 510, should Draymond Green be the sixth man instead of Pascal because of his offensive limitations that he has? What would you listen, that's an interesting take right there. Would you consider bringing Draymond off the bench? Again, he'll be on the floor in closing time. When it's closing time,
absolutely,
you got your best players out there. But the mix that you have, why not bring him in with a second unit if he's not an offensive threat and get Pascal out there so your team doesn't find it, your starting unit doesn't dig a hole for the second unit?
Oh, I mean, I don't know, because Draymond Green and Steph Curry have so much chemistry. I'm all for bringing Pascal scoring punch into the starting lineup. I just don't know if you take Draymond out to do it. Because, again, Draymond takes so much pressure off of Steph to handle the ball and to make plays. And you put all that pressure back on Steph, even if you have another scorer out there, I don't know that Steph is. So the question is in doing that, does that make it harder or easier to defend Steph Curry? And I feel like that still makes it easier because you're Steph Curry, everybody crowds you. You can't just kick it to Draymond Green and trust that he's going to get it to you. You just run and go do your little cuts and everything. Yeah, I don't know. But something should change in the starting lineup, right? Definitely, because you said the numbers,
right.
You presented the numbers, it's bad. And the second unit is better.
Is it Oubre? Is Oubre the piece that needs to maybe come off the bench? And Oubre needs to be, you know, in some ways that could be helpful for a guy. You're coming off the bench. Oubre's a good player. He's just, right now, the piece isn't fitting. He's the square peg in a round hole. It's just not fitting. But you know he eventually is going to fit. I still believe in Kelly Oubre. I know a lot of people in the NBA love Kelly Oubre. But sometimes you bring him in off the bench. Now you're going up against the opposition second team. You have a little advantage because Oubre is a starter. He can get his confidence against the second unit and then maybe build that up so that he can build himself back into the starting unit, and then you go back to Pascal coming in off the bench.
Oubre has a track record, and right now he's way below that. I'm not worried about Oubre in terms of what he can do. The question is how do you – I don't know that putting him on the bench – I'm saying a seance, let's take him on a spirit walk. We need to do something to get Kelly Oubre's mind right, because it's all in his head. And if he get out of his head, he's going to get back to doing what he's doing, which is a nearly 20 point a game guy, a guy who plays good defense, who has the athleticism to move about the court and is a high flying rim dunker type person, which you still see, but I don't know. Let's get some suggestions, okay? Because something needs to happen. A couple weeks ago, some guy called in and said, hey, mushrooms. I don't know what needs to happen with Kelly Oubre, but it has nothing to do with him being a starter or being off the bench. It's a psychological thing.
How about this? We got some numbers Dr. that are flown into us by the great Sterling Bennett, who's helping us out today. The Warriors' record when they outshoot their opponents is just 2-4. When they don't outshoot their opponents, they're 4-2. That's a pretty interesting set of numbers. In wins, though, they shoot over 41% from beyond the arc. In losses, they shoot below 29% from beyond the arc. So the three-point line is certainly a measuring stick for this team. They shoot it well beyond the arc. They give themselves a much better chance at winning.
Or to put it in layman's terms, you live by the three, you die by the three.
Good man. Good man. I like it. All right, 1 hour is done. We've got another hour to come. Mark Medina is going to join us here in just a second. We are going to break down the NBA and some other teams, what teams he's watching other than the Golden State Warriors. We'll get into some Warrior stuff. If you have questions for him, hit us on the text line, 888-957-9570. Shamari Block and Jim Cosimo with you on a Sunday morning on 95.7 The Game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.